Mornings and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. CBS News has learned that President-elect Donald Trump is expected to choose Senator Marco Rubio as his Secretary of State. CBS's Weijia Zhang reports.
He has put a premium on those people who have stood by his side.
52-year-old Richard Allen has been convicted of slashing and killing two teenage girls in Delphi, Indiana, while they were hiking in February 2017. CBS News legal contributor Jessica Levinson.
We're talking about somebody who, if they do get a sentence of 30 to 40 years, that is the equivalent likely to a life sentence.
Haiti's main airport shuts down as gang violence surges, and apparently targeted is a Spirit Airlines plane from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, as CBS's Chris Van Cleve reports.
The plane was on approach to land at the Haitian airport with 48 people on board when it appears it was struck by gunfire.
It comes on the same day a new Haitian prime minister is sworn in. CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Seth here, host of Over the Back Fence. We're on the air live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., taking your calls to buy or sell, talk local events, or whatever, only on WFHR.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Interesting little skit on Saturday Night Live. Saturday night to open up the program. Had some people saying bit too soon. Had some people saying it was offensive. Anybody who looks at SNL and goes, that's offensive, shut up. I thought it was funny. I thought it was right. I thought it's the feel of the country right now. Because there's a lot of people, me included, going, hey, there's a guy who's now going to be president who has told me he's coming after me. Retribution! There will be retribution. And I don't doubt him. Look, I take him at his word. Here's a guy who clearly thin-skinned enough to go and do some overreach like that. And look, that's the reality. These are folks who are going to overreach in an enormous way. And it's going to be incumbent on us, we, the rest of the people who didn't vote for him, the people who don't want this kind of chaos that we're going to see, it's incumbent on us to be the ones who show up, the ones who witness, if you will. Because bad stuff's going to happen. The solutions, however, are going to be in the suffering. The solutions are going to be in the savagery. And I know it sounds horrible, but the reality for me is nothing seems to happen until bad stuff happens that shock us to our core and tell us who these people are. Look, we know who Donald Trump is. His supporters don't. He is going to overreach because he believes he's got a mandate. He believes, I'm the man. I won, and it's my turn to exact revenge. Now, look, he didn't grow any new voters. Democrats beat themselves. And what's interesting is, I'm watching the left eat itself. I'm on a bunch of these email lists and a bunch of groups that, you know, I pay attention to what's being said. I'm on some right-wing groups as well, just because I want to know what people are talking about, want to engage in some back and forth, some discourse, if you will. And right now, the Democrats are playing the blame game. Each little subdivision is eating and attacking the other subdivision who's going after a different one. Because what Democrats have done really well is they've organized themselves into cute little groups. And I've got my silo and my title and my issue. And, well, it's the other guy. What is interesting, however, is they all hate the white guy. And I don't know why that is. You know, okay, we could say, you know, the white guys have done a lot of stuff. I'm not that guy. So when I hear one group eating another, I go, maybe we don't do this because this is why we lose. I mean, steal a line from Jeff Daniels in the TV show Newsroom. It's why the left loses so effing always is because they circular firing squads, man. And why the right has a massive megaphone that they've invested in for decades. So right now, what all of the groups, while they're not eating each other, actually do get right is that Democrats, the left, labor, whatever you want to say, that coalition is, they haven't built their own messaging machine. There's nothing. The reality is when I'm at the top of the left-leaning media programs in the country, and look, I do this as my passion, hobby, part-time job from a shed in my backyard, there's a problem. There's a problem with infrastructure. And when the messaging that we talk about in this program doesn't get heard by the audience that you hear on the right, you wonder why we lose the messaging war. Perfect example. Had a conversation with my red hat friend who said, there are litter boxes in every classroom. And I said, yeah, there are. There are litter boxes in a lot of my kids' classrooms, especially when they were younger. He says, see, you know. I go, well, it's not the reason that you think it is. You know, you think it's, you know, people dressing up as cats and wanting to use a litter box. That's ludicrous. That doesn't happen. I know you've told yourself, you've tied yourself into knots for that, but that's not the reality. The reality is those buckets of kitty litter are there in case there's a school shooting and little kids need somewhere to go to the bathroom. The bucket acts as a portable toilet. That's why they're there. Not because there's anyone doing this. They believe that. This is the other one. They believe that my kid can go to school and get gender reassignment surgery. They've been told this repeatedly. They could go and get, you know, without you knowing. Because Donald Trump said it. They go to school, a couple days later, they come home, all their plumbing's mixed up. And I'm going, are you kidding me? I can't even get the school to give my kid a freaking aspirin. Let alone any of that stuff. Where do you hear this stuff? And it's the misinformation megaphone on the right that's been doing this. So finally you get some folks going, maybe, I don't know, maybe we should be doing this. And someone like me, who's been screaming about this for at least the last quarter of a century, going, this is what we need to be building. You need to compete with the message. You need to talk to people. Everyone now gets that. You know, we should do something. Yeah, for the last quarter of a century, I've been begging. Now, do I think it's going to happen this time? No, because that would actually take work. And evidently, that's not something we really want to get involved in. That's going to take investment. And, oh, we can't do that. Because that's actually going to take some labor to do. Especially for the power brokers, because then we can't control you. And of course, you don't want to control me. You want me out there fighting for the working class of this country, organizing working people, white, black, brown, it doesn't matter. People who go to work and fight and claw just to make it a day's labor. Those are the people we need to be fighting back for on the left in the Democratic circles, because you've lost them because you haven't been talking to them. The right's been talking to them all the time. And they've created a narrative that you are the enemy. And until we figure out how to get better messaging out to them, you can have the greatest message of the world. Nobody hears it. Doesn't matter. We got work to do. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back with Sarah Burris.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I had one of those elevator conversations today. Someone said, so you're not a big Trump guy. What's the thing that you're most concerned about, or you don't like the most? And I go, look, you know, the reality is we have no idea how bad it's going to be. So when someone says, I know, we have no idea. How much mischief, damage, how many more crimes will be committed. But I do know all the weasels and dirtbags will be back. The Roger Stones of the world, they are going to be back. And, well, grifting. And this is what we want. This is what the country wanted. So it will be interesting to see. Here to share some thoughts on where we are, where we're going, what we're doing. My good friend Sarah Burris is here. She's a reporter from Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how the heck are you?
I'm not on the ledge like a lot of my friends are. A lot of my friends are like, oh, the sky's going to fall. Look, for me, the reality is it's going to be bad. It's going to be really bad. And I think back to history and go, okay, well, clearly we didn't learn from history. We've got to relearn this again. And sadly, the solutions are going to be in the savagery. The solutions are going to be in the suffering. The solutions are going to be in the pain of name the group. And eventually, it's going to be all of us. And at some point, maybe enough of us go, please stop.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? If people actually did come to that realization.
No, look, but... I had the conversation with my kids. And I said, look, the civil rights movement broke when people saw the savagery, when they saw the inhumanity, when they saw Bull Connor's dogs sigged on children, when they saw Bull Connor's, you know, fire hoses, you know, people tumbling down the street, when they saw in Alabama people being beaten on the bridge. They demanded change. So when this administration does what they say they're going to do, and I believe they will, I hope the humanity in us is still there, that we say no more.
I would hope so, too. I think looking at Ireland is a really good example. Whenever they had a woman who died because abortions were illegal, the whole country rallied. What we have done in the United States is something completely different, where a whole lot of women have died at this point, and we don't care.
And you've got a mainstream media that doesn't. You know, really report that. And you've got a right-wing media that almost celebrates it. You know, yeah. I'm sure you saw the quotes by this idiot right-wing commentator, provocateur, if you will, this Nick Fuentes, who's just getting attention. And look, he's getting attention because we know where the right is going, and he's one of the cheerleaders there on the right. It's all about hating on, you know, blacks and Jews and, you know, women. And you go down the list. It's all about hating on them. And he wants to dump on women, too. So,
yeah, I can't remember if it was him or someone in his ilk where they said something to the effect of your body, my choice.
Yes.
You know, flipping it.
That was him.
The adage is my body, my choice. And so he's just said, you know, no. Not anymore.
But he's not wrong. I mean, that's kind of the reality of the world we're in.
It is, and it's terrifying. But again, this is what they voted for. So I feel like we're going to have to spend the next several years saying things like, well, this is what you voted for. This is what you wanted. And what's sad is that I think many of us, those of us who are privileged enough to be white and middle class and, you know, stable without a whole lot of debt and all of those things, we're in a better position because, you know, we are not one of the marginalized groups of people who, you know, are going to basically watch their family be deported or, you know, watch their family have to struggle to buy a new laptop because tariffs are crazy, which I think is a lesson to everybody. You know, look and see what tariffs are going to make things really expensive and buy them now.
No, look, you know, I'm not an anti-tariff person. I think strategically used, they're a good thing. Broad stroke anything, I'm not in favor of. I've said a million times, I'm a protectionist. I lock the door when I leave my house. I'm not an isolationist. I don't have a giant moat around it. But we, from a strategic standpoint, and I think Biden did a good job of this, kept tariffs in place that Trump put in place that I agreed with, that were strategic. This broad-based stuff, as you've pointed out, it is going to cause massive inflation if they do it. I doubt they're going to do it. I think that was just one of those things that he threw out, hey, I'm going to do this, and some idiot bought into. And I really don't think they're going to. I don't think they're going to be able to do it.
Frankly, I think that should be the first question that we'd start asking members of Congress, right? They're coming back to the House because they've got to deal with a bunch of budget stuff and whatnot. I think we need to start asking them, okay, Donald Trump wants to start deporting people. When is that going to happen? How fast can you pass a bill to make that the mass deportations happen?
Yeah.
How fast can you pass the bill to make the tariffs happen? Because then I think you force the conversation on members of Congress to answer yes or no, this is going to happen. And then it puts them in a fight between Congress and the White House, which I'm all for, right? Like, let's make things difficult on them. Let's force members of Congress who just got elected to answer these questions.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where this goes, but I'm sure you saw the SNL skit on Saturday night.
Right.
Which is give Saturday Night Live credit. It was the right thing. I know everyone was, oh, it's too soon. Oh, it was offensive. No, it was right. It was smart because sadly, this is the brave new world.
It is. And I mean, the scary and probably most telling thing was when somebody said, Heil Trump.
Yeah.
Basically, what happened on SNL, if you didn't see it, is SNL said, you know, going back to all of the retribution and Trump wants to, you know, execute people and yada, yada, yada. They're like, we have always been with you, Donald Trump. We think you're amazing. And it's this kind of idea of, you know, worshiping the dear leader out of fear.
Yep.
But that's the kind of world that he built. And again, this is what they voted for.
But in that satire and in that bit of comedy, there's reality.
Yeah.
Because there are people, you know, the one woman said that you're the man that I want my future children to look up to. There are people who are saying that's true. There was the Asian guy said that if we find out someone voted for Kamala, we'll rat them out so fast. You know, that's already... I have friends who, you know, I'm going to tell people that you voted for Kamala. You don't have to. I've already said I did. But this kind of fascistic, you go back and you read about, you know, the Nazi era, what the brown shirts were doing. This is it.
It is. It's the slow progression. I mean, I think that's what a lot of folks forget, is they just assume that things happened in Germany very quickly, and it didn't. It was a slow movement over several decades.
Yep. No, and this is the thing. This is the question I got to ask you. That, you know, since SNL took the pledge that, you know, they voted for Donald, they were always with him. You know, he's doing a great job. Or are you taking the pledge?
Am I taking the pledge? Heil Trump, right?
You ratting anybody out? Me?
Oh, I'm never, ever ratting anybody out. That's just not right. I mean, I think there's been some tongue-in-cheek and some mean-spirited, you know, humor online with people saying, if you have Latino friends who have undocumented family members and they voted for Trump, it's time to call ICE on them. That's really, really gross.
No, look, I've had a couple people who have said that to me. That there are guys they work with that they don't know, so they're going to check on them, and they're that kind of, you know, we're now worried about everybody else, and this is what the right, they couldn't have dreamed of a better scenario than to have people, the working class, turning on each other even more.
Yep, that's exactly right. And I think the other thing too is watching Latinos turn on each other, right? Like, that's the thing about a lot of I think the majority of Latinos still voted for Harris, but it was in such a drastically reduced amount. And one of the things I saw on MSNBC was they were asking, you know, a Latino in Nevada, you know, why did you vote for Donald Trump? And they explained, well, yeah, I have family that's undocumented, but, you know, we need to get rid of all of these people coming into our country.
Because they're criminals.
It's like, you realize these people coming into your country means everybody who came into the country. Yeah, right?
So the question then is, what happens when the bus rolls up to their house? Because ultimately we're told, and I don't know if this is going to happen. I think it's going to happen in select places, especially in red states, where they're going to be able to purge whoever they want. And then probably move them to blue states to cause more chaos, because that's what they're really hoping for. But I think it'll be very public.
See, I wondered if it would happen in blue states as a form of retribution.
No, I think in blue states, they will push people there to cause other people to go, no, we want them out of here. Because you go into New York and you talk to some of the New Yorkers, they're on edge. They don't want the immigration in their backyard either. So this is an interesting, it's going to be interesting to see how they play it and how public they are about the deportations as a signal for people who may want to come here. Again, as I said from the beginning, the savagery, the suffering, that's where we'll find our solutions.
And I think too, a lot of what we saw during COVID, you know, whenever you have a stoppage of the workforce coming into the United States, it means that a lot of temporary, low-paying jobs that immigrants are welcomed into the country to do, like, you know, picking vegetables or, you know, those kinds of jobs, we end up with a shortage of food.
Right.
You end up with farmers who can't, who are basically throwing crops away. Crops are going rotted on trees and in the fields because there's no one to pick them. And so add that to this whole idea of tariffs, right? Like, I went to the grocery store like everybody else did this weekend, right? And I'm looking through at all of these different products, and it's like, grown in Mexico, grown in Panama, grown, right? Like, all of these things are going to be, you know, several dollars higher, and we won't be able to get enough people to work on our farms to access the food that we are growing.
Well, here's a question I have, and maybe I'll bring this up with Scott Paul when I talk to him later in the week, because we've got free trade agreements. You said Mexico, you said Panama. We've got free trade agreements with both of them. Do these tariffs apply to countries we've already got free trade agreements with? Are we then going over those, or is this just for China and other countries that we don't? I got a lot of questions that weren't answered in the campaign.
One of the things Trump did say is he said, if Mexico doesn't stop sending immigrants into the United States, then we're going to put a 20% higher tariff on them than anybody else.
Yeah. So when the beginning of World War III happens because of all this disruption, will we still blame Joe Biden or Hillary's emails?
Right. That's the good question. What was the line that you and I talked about? Well, Darth Vader blew up the Death Star and a couple of planets or whatever, but I just don't know enough about Princess Leia.
Yeah,
because be the thing that they say? Be like, well, I just didn't know enough about Kamala Harris.
Yeah, and I love the blame game. And as I said at the beginning, I'm on a bunch of lists and I'm in a bunch of, kind of groups where it's a very diverse environment. And it's been each subgroup attacking the other subgroup, attacking another subgroup and another going, but them all attacking the straight white male because straight white men are, I got just pummeled in a lot of places. And I'm going, I'm not feeling very welcome here. And you wonder why. And this is, I think, a big part of why the Democrats have done so poorly is they've segmented themselves into so many different, easily pitted against each other groups that I don't know that there's a way forward for them.
Isn't that weird, though, that we looked at the Republican Party as if it was on the edge of collapse?
Yeah.
And yet now we're talking about the Democratic Party as if it's so fragmented that it can't possibly ever win an election again.
I don't know about that. I'm not that crazy, but I'm saying in this election, we were easily pitted against each other. Look, Trump didn't grow any new voters. He got less votes than he did the last time. But still, it's the Democrats who didn't show up. It's the Biden coalition, if you will, that didn't show up. And why is that? And I believe a big part of it is, they just ate each other.
Well, I think, too, the thing that really blows my mind is that because they shoved Joe Biden out, you didn't have Joe Biden there to reach out to that group of people, to the white dude demographic, and be like, look, guys, here are all of the amazing things that I did for you. Yes, we have further to go. Yes, there are things that you still need. We're working on it, right? But it's like they shoved Joe Biden out, but they also shoved out everything good that the administration did. And they took for granted this idea that people just understood, right? They just assumed, oh, we brought back an entire massive bridge and port in 3 months. And you think that that's normal? Like this is made out of Legos?
Yeah. But here's the thing. And this is the one thing that everybody keeps getting. And they get it right every election that we lose. You don't have the infrastructure to tell those stories. I've been saying this for nearly 20 years now. Democrats don't have the megaphone. They don't have the platforms for people like me, for other people, for other commentators to grow an audience big enough to compete with the right because they don't invest in it. The right has spent billions of dollars building this massive megaphone, and it's paid off for them.
It has. And I mean, I feel like when I first started out and was working in youth politics, the one thing I kept saying over and over again to Democratic officials was like, look, you really should probably invest in talking to young people, right? Like the millennial generation is the largest generation in history so far. They're just starting to vote. If you invest in them now, it could be a relationship that you have for, generation or for decades to come, right? Then you get Generation Z, right, that just came in. And it's the exact same thing over and over again, except it's a bigger generation. It's even more diverse than millennials are. And again, I'm like, you guys, you have to figure this out because you're ignoring the people who are your base constituency, the people who actually do believe in you, and you're not investing in that. So again, it's like you're failing on the message delivery. You're failing on growth in the party by investing in constant communication to young people about, and you're definitely not giving them a seat at the table. So it's just really frustrating to watch this fail over and over and over again.
Yeah. But for all that failure, I guess we're going to make concentration camps great again.
Every time I've been seeing this story recently about, private prisons taking over these like detention camps, where basically they're going to start sending all of the people who are going to be victims of the mass deportation. And I'm wondering, like, is that going to be where they start sending, you know, the liberal media? Are they going to send us to the camps? Or is it going to be like a re-education thing? Like, I remember an episode of South Park where they sent them to a concentration camp where they made them color all the time, like more and more coloring. So, you know, maybe that's what it is.
Well, we will see. I hope I see you next week. I'm sure we're good till the 20th, maybe the 21st.
I hope so.
Sarah, I appreciate the time. Great stuff.
Thank you.
Our good friend Sarah Burris. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You know, look, if you don't see us, if we just disappear one day, well, maybe we're in one of the new great, making great concentration camps great again. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear and cooler tonight, lows in the upper 20s. Sunshine and again cooler tomorrow, highs only in the upper 40s. Rain returns for Wednesday, high only in the mid 40s. But back into sunshine for Thursday and Friday, highs climb to near 50. Right now it's 33.
The excitement.
Oh, he stones Bronczynski with a glove save.
The energy.
What's he going to do? He shoots and he scores.
The tradition.
You've got to understand history if you're ever going to write your own.
It's everything.
He scores. Badgers answer right back.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger hockey.
Sponsored by Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep, Econ Electric, and 8th Street Auto. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, streaming live and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, I go back to a bunch of emails of people thinking the sky's falling, worried about, hey, what's January 20th going to look like? What kind of a world are we moving towards? And should we be ducking and covering? Should we be hiding the children? How bad will it be? Well, here to share some thoughts on maybe we'll get the predictions. We didn't do really great on the election, but I've asked my good friend Bob Ney to come share some thoughts. Bob's a former Ohio congressman and political analyst. Bob, thanks for making time for us.
Thank you, Rick. Now, I'm just going to say this because I've said it on a couple other stations. You know, you and I think we're good at analyzing. Maybe the prediction side, we have to work on it or drop it. But the analyzing side is still okay.
Yeah, so are we going to be okay? I mean, it's going to be bad. Look, everybody agrees the next 4 years for some segments of the population, it's going to get ugly. No one can predict just how bad, and I'm not going to try. Look, January 20th, 2017, I said it's going to be really bad. There's going to be lots of criming, lots of stuff going on. I couldn't have predicted how bad those 4 years were. Not going to try this time, but I'm curious your thoughts. Is the sky falling? Should we be hunkering down?
Well, there's a couple of things that are in the process of happening that I've watched that I'm scratching my head right now trying to think, okay, where does this go? And one of the things is the pronouncement that they want to make sure this time that Trump is surrounded by people that don't go contrary to him. Now, you know, I've been in public office. You have heads of your office, chiefs of staff, office managers, whoever, that have the ability to come in. And when I would say, well, we want to do this, and they would say, well, wait a minute. Okay, let's talk this through.
Yeah.
Now, what I'm hearing and some of the articles I've read is going contrary to that type of thought, where it's going to be, let's fire those missiles. Okay, we'll do that. And that person walks out the door and said, oh my goodness, you won't believe what he just said. So I don't know. Number one, I'm bringing this up because if it takes that trend that you have all yes people And he made it clear, Pompeo, the previous Secretary of State, won't be part of the cabinet. You know, they've been making that type of thing.
No Nikki Haley. Right.
No Nikki Haley. So if you're going to have that, where does that end up within the government and its ability to run itself?
Right.
But Bob, this is what
we were talking about all during the campaign. Project 2025 is all about making patronage great again. They've been lining these sycophants and these true loyalists and these pledge takers up for about a year now. So I don't know why this is a story, because we knew during the election that that's what they were going to do. That's what they told us they were going to do.
Oh, yes. And I think they'll do that throughout the government. Now, can they change the civil service structure? I don't know that yet. That's yet to be seen. If it's done by executive order, it's going to go, through court processes. But we'll see on that. So it's going to be an issue. How's the government going to be run? That could be very painful. The other side of this is what you started your show with, which is, people now having what I'll call the meltdowns over, are they afraid? Should they be afraid of? Should they be afraid? And I would say, what should they do? We've got to add that as the fourth thing. Now, I've had some really interesting conversations and calls since the election. Some of them are way out there, of people who are American, who have given birth to American kids in American hospitals, that are starting to freak out that the kids are going to be ripped out of their house. I don't know why, but they are. Now, there's other people that should be very, very concerned, like the Dreamers, who had parents that weren't legal, but they were born here. And I think there's some legitimate concerns. But what I've told everybody that, has a fear of the unknown is that eventually you can have your fear and you can have your meltdown, or however you want to handle it, but there has to be some type of proactive considerations, in what I call the energetic give and take of public debate. In other words, call, write, form a group.
You got to organize.
Everybody just sits there, and these things will happen. They will happen.
No, I've been saying this as well. You got to organize. You got to find your community. You got to speak up in the moment. You've got to be present. In 2008 when they were throwing people, in 2009 and 10 when they were throwing people out of their homes, you had this group called the Home Defenders League, who, when they would find out someone was being foreclosed on, they would put 100 people in the house so that nobody could get in. And they showed up and they stood by people. And I think we're going to have to use some of those kind of tactics going forward, especially, as you said, you've got the people who are the DACA kids who are probably going to be on the list. You've got families who could be, I've had some people tell me that they're going to go to their workplace and pick out people who, they don't look like they should be here, and turn them in. Who knows how crazy this could be if that kind of stuff starts happening?
Well, that's a really good point, because let me give an example of something that I lived through for a few months until I left Iran. I was in Iran in 1978, the revolution of the Shah started. Now, you had situations, Rick, where one neighbor hated the other neighbor for 15 to 20 years, right? Well, once the revolution started, all you had to do was say, I think that person's protesting the Shah, or I think that that person is protesting the committee, the comité, the, Khomeini's people. And all of a sudden, it didn't matter what was accurate, panic sets in, right? And I use that as an example, because when there's an unknown and there's fear, panic can set in. I've seen it happen. Yeah. And here, when it comes to, this isn't a small issue, when it comes to whether you're going to be kicked out of the country or not, or whether you should be kicked out of the country or not, and if you can legally be kicked out of the country or not, beyond those issues that have to be settled, what you just said, though, will exist, just like it I witnessed overseas, where people are saying, I think that worker over there, I think that's one of them. And then all of a sudden it starts in the workplace. Maybe somebody legally starts to look into them. There's all kinds of repercussions out there.
No, it's crazy. And, you know, the sad reality is, you know, I don't know that we're the country that's going to stop it. You know, this is where the fear of I'm sure people that you've talked to, that you get rounded up, you get thrown out of the country. You know, this guy's somebody who, you know, he doesn't think the law applies to him. So once they round you up and throw you out, not a lot of recourse from outside, because I'm sure you've heard the word remigration. They're looking to go and take lots of people out. I don't know they're going to be able to do it, but it'll be interesting to see how they go about it.
Well, you have Miller, who, you know, is Trump's right-hand man on immigration. Now, it's going to be interesting to see where that goes also on the legal immigration side of visas, even tourist visas to come to the United States. It's going to be something to watch on that side of it, too, because he, Miller, is trying to stop, birthright, trying to stop the fact if you become a citizen, then your parents can't, or your brother or sister cannot even apply. So there's going to be a lot to this. Now, I will say this. If they focus on, you know, who to snatch off the street and it turns into, you know, this big food fight over that, and they don't do anything at the border itself, then eventually they will not be as successful on this issue as they think they are going to be.
I think the cruelty is always the point on that side of the aisle. And as I've said, I think, you know, for the rest of us, the solution is in the savagery and in the suffering. And sadly, it has to be this way. And look, I look at our Supreme Court as part of this whole thing. I know there are, you know, there's talk right now. There's some crazy talk on the left, and I'm sure you've all heard it. You know, Biden should resign and let Kamala be president. Or better yet, we should get, you know, Sonia Sotomayor to resign so that Biden can nominate Kamala to be a Supreme Court justice. And I'm going, a lot of crazy talk out there, a lot of stuff that's not going to happen and can't happen.
Don't forget, Biden should pardon Trump. I heard that one.
Why? I mean, I'm trying to figure out why.
It's out there. Biden should consider pardoning Trump. And I didn't hear it from the Trump people. Now, I did see the quip where Trump said, insinuated, maybe they should pay some of Kamala Harris's debt. I mean, I'm looking at these things. I'm like, wow, this is surreal.
No, but you know, correct me if I'm wrong. But if you get a pardon, don't you kind of have to admit you were wrong?
Yeah. Well, you know what you can say? You can say, well, he's just trying to spare all the hassle because I'll be found innocent anyway. I think what's going to happen here is these cases are just going to go into the deep freeze, especially the Georgia case. They're going to go into the deep freeze.
I got to ask you about the Senate, because evidently Wednesday, the big fight in the Senate on who the Senate majority leader is. You're not going to have Mitch McConnell to kick around anymore. As I understand, John Thune, John Cornyn, and Rick Scott are the field, I guess. I guess Thune is the front runner, if I'm getting this right.
I'm not going to predict anything anymore, but I'm going to go with the two front runners are Cornyn and Thune. Scott's throwing his name out there. He did election night. He's not a factor. Thune or Cornyn, and probably Thune has the upper hand.
So what is that going to mean? I mean, you know, Trump has said, you know, he wants someone who's going to be in his corner. I mean, I look at, you know, some of the senators have had Trump, you know, mock them, make fun of them, make fun of their families, their wives, and they're kissing his behind. Thoughts on how this plays out?
Yeah, I do have some, I think, solid thoughts on it, and here they are. Cornyn had made statements about Trump. Of course, we have a vice president of the United States that called Trump America's Hitler, and he's now going to be the vice president-elect of the United States, all right? So, you know, they made up, obviously. And that's a heck of a comment to come back from and make up. I think that I don't care what Thune's attitude has been or Cornyn, either one of them, Trump has the honeymoon effect. He won the popular vote first time since 1988. I think it has been for a Republican electoral vote. Contrary to my friends saying it was a bunch of white racists, no, it was a ton of mixtures of people. Okay,
and it was a bunch of Democrats who just stayed home.
That's the other thing, and her underperformance.
Yeah,
from Biden. Of course, some in the Biden camp are whispering, "You see, Biden would have beat him." I don't think so, but you've got all these things out here. But when it comes to the Senate. I watched Rubio today. I thought it said a lot. They posed the question, if RFK Jr. is, and he hesitated, if RFK Jr. is given a cabinet position, will he be confirmed? And he gave the, we take everything in consideration, but basically they'll confirm him. Trump is in, right now, is in the driver's seat. Whenever a candidate or a campaign says one word, I worry. You know what that word is? Not he has the support, he has
mandate.
Yeah. You got it. It's like we rehearsed this tonight. Mandate. When I have heard in the course of my 24 years in public office, people in private rooms, and here's what they'll say. I have a mandate of the people. They get elected and they think everything they come up with is cool because they were elected. Well, you know what? They learn pretty fast. That's not always the case. But when I hear this, which I've heard, the mandate, that's going to be thrown out. So I think it's going to be a definite honeymoon effect out of fear in the Senate.
No, I got to tell you, I think Trump is going to he believes he has a mandate. I think the Republicans believe they have a mandate and they're going to do what everybody does who believes they have the mandate, especially when they believe it comes from high above. And that's going to be to overreach. And that's going to be to do extreme things. So, all of the stuff that seems to be unpopular in Project 2025 that they're going to move on, I think we'll turn around and bite them. So the question I have for you, because, if they do have a small majority in the House, they have a majority in the Senate. Does the filibuster go away this time? Do Republicans pull the trigger on killing the filibuster to ram all of their policies through?
I mean, I hope personally, I hope it goes away sometime. I had the idea that 4 years ago they should have said no more filibuster, and it'll take effect in 4 years from now. I felt that was the fairest thing for both parties to do. Look, a party gets in the minority and we want the filibuster. Then if that party becomes the majority, we don't want the filibuster. I don't know. I don't know that it goes away, but I hope someday it does. I hope. I think it's antiquated.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the Senate operates, because the Senate, for me, is the key to all this. I think the House, there will be lots of infighting. There will be lots of entertainment there. I guess the other question, does the rule to vacate the chair, does that stay in the next House session?
If I were Speaker, Johnson, I would absolutely make sure that rule is done away with. You'll get Democrat support on that too, by the way, because the Democrats one day could be in the same position and then they have to remove the rule. Why not remove the rule now as the Republicans try to remove the rule? I think he's got to do it because the Republicans spent so much time fighting each other and a speaker got bumped out and then they didn't like this guy before he even was running and on and on and on. It was a circular firing squad. But for the health of the system, you can't allow one member every week to become, the dictator of the House. And, I want the speaker to leave. You can't run a government like that. So I hope they do it. I don't know if Johnson will have the guts or not, but I would hope they do it.
Well, going to be interesting to see. It's it's one of those things where someone said, is this going to be good for you? Yeah, for doing this show. Yeah, this administration is going to be full of things to talk about.
It should be.
We are not.
And here, you're a Kmart grassroots guy. I once was called a Kmart grassroots guy, and I thought that's offensive, but it's not. It's okay. I know Kmart's have shut down, but it was just, retail politics is what it is at the base level. That's how you spent your entire life. You know that system, and so do I. And now would be the time for the Democratic side to understand that it's not good enough to say we hate all those people that voted for him. No, it's the electorate. Some of those same people voted for Obama. Some of those same people years ago voted for Bush. It's the electorate. And the organizing and the ability to, come up with issues and have the platforms. It's just like, I know everybody wants to get frustrated and mad right now, but at some point in time, the Democratic side has to say, okay, let's get that out of our system. Yep. Where do we go from here?
And look, you got to pick topics and positions that are going to be popular with the majority of people. And this is where I said, the reality is we brought identity politics to the class war and got beat. And the reality is I think Democrats have the right tools to win the class war and to make all of the other things right as well. But if you can't fight the class war, you can't make lives better, you can't fight for better wages, hours, conditions for everybody, we got problems. We got problems.
Well, yeah. I have a really good friend, and she told me she's angry. And she said, well, I guess it just boiled down to the price of potatoes. And I said, well, yeah, kind of did. Yeah, recognize that is part of it.
And it'll be interesting to see what Trump does to bring those prices down, because I'm looking forward to that $1.50 a gallon gas. I'm looking forward to those 99-cent dozen eggs. I'm looking forward to it. It ain't going to happen. So I can look forward to it all I want. But we'll see. Bob, as always, great stuff, my friend.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you.
My good friend Bob Ney. Want to hear your thoughts. You looking forward to the buck and a half gallon gas? Think that's coming? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1887. That was a tragic day for the labor movement. Four men were hung in Chicago for their alleged role in the bombing at a labor rally at the city's Haymarket Square a year earlier. In a sensational trial, a total of eight men were convicted for Haymarket. Although the trial had not proven any of the men had any ties to the bombing, five were sentenced to die. One died in jail before the execution could take place. The others were martyred for their support of the labor movement and the fight for the eight-hour workday. Two of the men were German-born August Spies and Adolf Fischer, who had worked at Arbeiter Zeitung, a Chicago German-language pro-worker newspaper. A third was Albert Parsons, a Southern-born anarchist and the editor of the working people's English-language newspaper, The Alarm. The fourth was George Engel, a German-born labor activist and owner of a toy store. Neither Parsons nor Engel were even present at Haymarket during the time of the bombing. Before he was executed, Albert Parsons declared, "Let the voice of the people be heard." August Spies shouted, "The day will come when our silence will be more powerful than the voices you strangle today." In 1893, a Haymarket Martyrs Monument was commemorated at the Forest Home Cemetery just outside of Chicago. Carved at the base is August Spies' declaration. That same year, the governor of Illinois pardoned the remaining three Haymarket prisoners. Seven of the eight men who were convicted of the Haymarket affair are buried at the cemetery, along with many other progressive activists who wanted to be interned alongside the martyrs. Each year, visitors from around the world visit the cemetery to pay their respects to these heroic men.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Ah, yes, the dreaded mandate word. And look, you know, it's that absolute power corrupts absolutely. No question, this idea that they've got this big mandate, you can bet they're going to overreach. They're going to. And look, on day one, Trump, his dictator day, he's going to go and he's going to do a bunch of stuff. Executive orders for mass deportation, executive orders for massive tariffs on Mexico, executive order on ending birthright citizenship, executive orders to deregulate anything that drives up the cost of goods. Executive orders on promoting natural gas and killing electric vehicles. We're going to go after transgender people and critical race theory. Going to clean up the swamp and end the deep state. Executive orders out the yazoo. And it will be interesting to see what they do with this then. Because a lot of it is changing how our government works. Now, one of the things that Trump is still, I think, chafed over is that he realized as president that he wasn't king. And that just because he said it doesn't mean it would actually happen. Whereas in the business world, dictator world, when dear leader, the boss, says it, it's got to be done. Rude awakening during his presidential term the first time. This time, I think a little different in that the machine, the think tank world, the lobby world, none of those people gave him a chance to win. So they weren't prepared with their bad ideas. We now have Project 2025. We now have all of the right-wing groups going, salivating, going, all the bad ideas that we've been dreaming out, we can actually do now. And they're going to try. And they're going to try in a big way. Because they now got a guy who's emboldened, who feels that he has a mandate, and they think that they're going to get what they want and get what they need to get through to change this country. Because understand, these people fundamentally hate this nation. They love some idealized era back 100 years ago or 200 years ago or 250 years ago. They love that when the handful, the billionaires of the day, the robber barons controlled everything and everyone else were mere peasants and, well, worker bees to make them more profit, to make their lives better. Why else would Elon Musk spend so much money and so much of his time to get Donald Trump elected? Understand, Elon Musk sees Donald Trump as his puppet president. He's going to get whatever he wants. He's going to get him to power. He can't himself be president, not a citizen. But the fact that an immigrant is the guy who's that close to the White House of going after immigrants is going to be... I'm wondering how long it is before Trump throws Musk under the bus. But think about this Operation Wetback. At what point does Trump go, you know, Elon, you've outlived your usefulness. Out you go. Operation Wetback? Could you be any more offensive? And the answer is no. That's the point. Now, I know we're going back and talking about they did that during the Eisenhower years. Yeah, they want to do it again. Mass deportation. What did they say? 11 million people? 11 million people that they're going to get on a big bus and drive out of here. The question is, will you tolerate that? Because understand, American citizens are going to get caught up in this. Understand, Americans will be harmed by this. Understand, it's going to be inflationary. So when you're paying, you know, $12 for an apple, you'll know why. I guess we have to go through this. But the part of that for me that's important is that we pay attention. Our eyes are open. We're paying attention to what this administration is going to do. And they've already told you there's a lot of cruelty coming. There's a lot of savagery coming. We have to pay attention. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick@therickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therickssmithshow.com.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.